Anyway, listen, we had a lovely response to the first episode of our Mooney Talks series, which was broadcast last Friday night at 10 p.m. here on RTE Radio 1. This is a series of talks given by Mooney Goes Wild experts and academics from University College Cork, which we recorded last May in front of a live audience. Next week's episode at 10 p.m. here on RTE Radio 1 features UCC's Dr. Owen Lettice talking about trees.
One of the things we often get asked is about native trees versus non-native trees, and, you know, what's the difference and does it really matter anyway? And I suppose the one definition of a native tree or a native species is that it was, you know, here before the end of the last ice age, or it managed to introduce itself without, I suppose, human interference or human influence as well. So what you've got is certainly a small group of native trees, and then you've got a whole bunch of introduced species then as well. And of course there's some species like the strawberry tree, like Arbutus, which we're actually unsure one way or the other whether it's native or whether it's been introduced or how it managed to find itself here. So trees are interesting from that point of view as well.
That's Mooney Talks next Friday night right here on RTE Radio 1 at 10 p.m. Now, have we got Adam sorted? We have indeed. We're going to talk to Adam Smith now. He's an ecologist. He's based in Bavaria in Germany. He did a lot of his studies here in Ireland at UCD. We spoke to Adam on the programme before. He led the largest wildlife camera project in Ireland. He was assisted in doing so by the Rewild Wicklow Conservation Group, which is now calling for the introduction of a deer management plan after it recorded the dominance of the non-native Sika deer in County Wicklow. Let's say good night, Adam. How are you?
Hi, Derek. How's it going?
Very good, thank you. Now, will you please remind everybody about the work you've been undertaking?
Sure, I can. I think I should start at the start. It's a project that I started in 2021 with some help from UCD. And it is part of a wider European initiative called Snapshot Europe, in which different research teams use a shared methodology to collect camera trap data simultaneously. So what we do is we find a suitable place, we bring out these wildlife cameras, trail cameras or camera traps, and put them in the forest. So we've been doing that since 21. In 2022, Rewild Wicklow, a community group based down there, joined us and we put out more camera traps, and 2023 was our third year of the project. So this year we've already deployed our cameras for 2024.
Now, without getting too technical, Adam, but for the benefit of the listeners, I know what a camera trap is. I have one at home and the guys probably have them as well. But you might describe exactly what they look like and how they work.
Yes, a camera trap is effectively a battery operated camera with a sensor, which you can place on a post, on a tree, in some location where you expect to find wildlife. And what happens is when an animal walks by the sensor, it's an infrared sensor, is activated by the animal's heat and movement. The system turns on and the camera trap either takes video or images, depending on the settings that you've applied. So then you come back after a certain amount of time, you can collect your SD card like a normal camera. And what you've got is the images or the videos which were activated when the animals walked past. So you can see kind of a glimpse into their world, you know, when people aren't there.
So a true picture, if you will, of this place at this time.
Exactly. And as part of our study design, you know, we take the GPS coordinates of each of our camera trap locations. So we get concrete evidence of a species being at that place at that moment.
Now, the reason for setting up all of these cameras?
Well, at the start, it was interest. We picked central County Wicklow because we knew there was quite a lot of wildlife hanging around there. And we in UCD were specifically interested in deer. So we said, OK, we know it's a bit of a hotspot. Let's put some cameras there. And over time, we realized that we had a good systematic study design. You know, we had quite a lot of cameras, and year on year, we could actually evaluate trends in the wildlife population, and especially the deer. And, you know, the deer get a lot of attention because of the overabundance of Sika mostly in that area. So what we're able to do is track their population year on year.
And what have you gleaned?
Well, we certainly see that that Sika deer are the most populous species. We get them on every camera trap location, and that's every camera trap location going back to 2021. So we've never had a working camera trap that hasn't had Sika on it. They're widespread and they're quite highly abundant. So we see in general something like 75 to 80% of all detections of wild mammals are Sika.
And when you say 75% of all detections, how many detections are you talking about? Is it in the hundreds, the thousands, the hundreds of thousands?
We take multiple pictures at the one time. So you kind of take a sequence of pictures as the animals walk past, but we call one of those events a detection. We have last year more than 180,000 photos from our 47 camera trap sites, but we have, I think it's around 9,000 detections overall. So most of them are Sika.
Now, would you be able to tell the difference between one and another? Can you count individuals?
We can count individuals. We can't identify them like so that we know the same deer moving between sites. You can maybe do it if you pay a lot of attention to, say, a stag, and you can look at his antlers and say, okay, that's definitely the same guy walking around. But in general, our camera traps are spread out enough that it should be in the range of one individual's territory. These deer are not specifically territorial, but they kind of track in a certain area. So sometimes we will get the same deer on different camera traps, but for the most part, it's the same individuals. But sometimes they're moving in groups, and we can count the group size as well. We can actually also count, you know, how many males there are, how many females, and look at the ratio. And you know, that's important for the management. And as well as that, we can see how many females have calves in that year.
So you had your cameras, all 47 of them, set up on private and public land. Am I correct in saying that?
It's Quiltshire Forests, it's privately owned lands, and the Wicklow Mountains National Park as well.
That area you're mentioning, I've been there many times, and there's lots of wildlife there. So you can't have only been seeing Sika deer. You must have seen other stuff as well, other mammals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the great thing about camera traps is they're not species specific. So anything that's big enough to activate them, we get. And we have stuff as small as wood mice. We have some of the more interesting species. Pine martens and red squirrels are some of our most exciting captures. We get a lot of foxes as well. They're pretty close behind Sika in terms of the next most popular species. We get badgers and hares sometimes too. And then in terms of the other deer, we do get a few fallow deer, especially on the more southeasterly camera traps. And we have red and Sika deer hybrids, which have a red deer-like appearance. They tend to be more on the westerly camera traps.
So that's fantastic news. You know, you're seeing so many Sika. Isn't that incredible?
It can be if you're very much into hunting, if you're kind of sole purpose on this earth is to go out and hunt, and if you you're just interested in seeing high abundances of deer. But of course there are other effects of overabundant deer. Of course deer are part of our biodiversity, and you know, large herbivores in general have really key roles in ecosystems. They move nutrients, they dictate how vegetation communities grow, how forests grow. Even forests hundreds of years from now will be influenced by how deer behave at the present moment. So when you have an overpopulation or overabundance, you can have overgrazing or overbrowsing on forests. And this can be, you know, detrimental to biodiversity when you lose ground flora, when you lose regenerating trees, because that vegetation is also important for pollinators. It's important for birds. It's important habitat for other smaller species. So there is a balance to be struck when it comes to deer populations.
So you think there is not the correct balance? There is not an equilibrium there?
Well, I put it to you this way. I do camera trapping all over Europe, you know, as far east as Ukraine and as far west as Ireland. And in terms of skewed mammal communities, this one stands out. I think there is a lot of deer hunted in Wicklow every year. And, you know, that's probably a really good thing. But in terms of like actual management of Sika, actual management of these deer hotspots, I think we need probably a more coordinated approach. There needs to be a bit more science backing up our efforts, so that's when we put boots on the ground to say, okay, we're going to manage the deer population to a sustainable level, that we can actually apply that management effectively based on the data that's collected, based on what the environment can hold, and definitely based on what we perceive or what we measure as deer damage to forests or other land uses.
Niall.
Adam, I live in Wicklow myself, and I regularly see Sika in the woodlands, but also sometimes on roadside verges and even running across the roads. Occasionally, I'll even see them dead at the side of the road, having been hit by vehicles. They are quite a hazard, and there does seem indeed to be an overpopulation. When I say overpopulation, it's not even a native species to Ireland, so in my book, any of them is too many. But you are right in saying, of course, that we would have native large herbivores, including red deer, which the Sika have displaced or outbred within Wicklow. We just have some hybrids now. But of course, what we're lacking are the large predators other than human hunters to control their numbers. How big of a problem is that, do you think? And is it growing? Are you seeing, as this project is continuing, that the number of deers and the numbers of these confirmations of sightings is actually increasing?
For our reporting purposes, we just do a quite, basic preliminary report. I haven't had the opportunity to get really deep into the statistics for this camera trap data, but what we've seen is a slight increase in the relative abundance of Sika. So tracking year to year, the number of Sika that we get per unit of effort that we put into the survey, so it is going up. But you'll often hear people say it's going up exponentially, but that obviously isn't the case. It's going up slightly, of course, as you mentioned. There is a certain risk with, vehicle collisions. This is something that, I mentioned just there to Derek. Coordinated deer management means looking at those risks. We don't have a good system of recording wildlife vehicle collisions so that we can actually build in mitigation. We can put in effort in areas where we know risk is high. So it's part of a good deer management strategy is finding that risk and managing it well. When it comes to large carnivores, yes, as I said as well, I'm working a lot here on the continent. Most of the areas I work in have good populations of lynx or wolves or both, and sometimes even bears. And of course, they change the behavior of the prey species. They move them about the landscape in a different way. They create what we call a landscape fear. They do obviously control numbers as well, because they, through direct predation, they will remove animals from the landscape. Now, generally, they're not the biggest and healthiest deer that are there. Sometimes, of course, a wolf pack can take down something big, but it's generally the more vulnerable animals. What I will say on that is most wolves have returned to quite a lot of Europe now, and every European Union country that had wolves previously has them back. So it's just Ireland in the European Union that's lacking them. But at the same time, all other countries in Europe have quite well-established hunting schemes. They have really deep hunting cultures, with quite a lot of tradition in there as well. But also a lot of them are backed up by super serious science. And that means that in terms of managing large carnivores, large herbivores and humans in a shared landscape, it actually takes a bit of everything. And only in these really big wild areas, think areas of the Carpathians, where there's really, really, really low human densities, that you can let those natural processes, play out by themselves.
There's a bird that I very much like called the wood warbler. It's a relative of the chiffchaff and the willow warbler. And in Ireland, one of the only places where it breeds with any sort of regularity is County Wicklow, especially in the oak woodlands. And in those woodlands, it's very, very scarce. It doesn't even necessarily nest every year. But when I've gone to see them, places around like Loch Dan, for example, where they occur, I realise when walking there that it's areas where there are fences up to keep the deer out. And I realise, what's the difference there? Well, there's understory. There's all sorts of frockens and other plants growing up underneath the trees. And these are where these birds actually nest. And the same goes for many other ground nesting birds in Ireland as well. So where the deer are excluded, other wildlife, including birds and pollinating insects, seem to do better. But then, of course, requires quite serious fencing, significant other problems down the line. Do you think that is a potential solution here, to have more nature reserve areas that are kept deer free through exclusion methods?
I think it's one tool in the toolbox. every time you fence an area and you exclude deer from it, you know, in a very small way, increase the density of deer outside of that area. So it's a bit, it's an accounting game. It's a balancing act between the hunting part. There's the infrastructure like fencing, which we can use to protect woodlands, but we can also use to protect road areas from deer vehicle collisions. So it's definitely something that's in the toolbox. It's quite expensive. They're extremely costly to keep up as well. And it only takes one breach to fill the woodland back up with deer. And if no one is, you know, actively on the ground managing the site or the land, you know, you could actually lose that ground flora quite quickly if the deer get back inside. So it's not a silver bullet. Basically the same as anything. The hunting isn't, the large carnivores aren't, and the fencing isn't. So when we think about deer management and deer management plans and strategy, it's about utilizing that toolkit, some parts for management, some parts for conservation, and as well as that, taking into account the cultural aspects associated with it as well.
Richard.
Adam, I wonder about this. Deer are a problematic group for the reason that none of them really appear to be true natives. For instance, we take the red deer, which was there before the last interglacial, but it went extinct and came back, or was brought back. Then you have the fallow, which was introduced by the Normans, and we have the sika, which was introduced by Lord Powerscourt in 1862. Now, if we look on the red deer as a positive animal, as we tend to do, and we want to protect it, and we give it to the term native, which is probably quite meaningless really nowadays, but we have this totally different attitude to the sika. It seems to me, speaking to people, that the sika is regarded as some sort of nuisance, a kind of something that shouldn't be there, or shouldn't be there to a greater extent than the other deer are. Now, the map I have in my mind is of hybrids in Wicklow. The deer and hybrid are all kind of contaminated. The red sika is a mess sort of thing. Whereas I understand that there are true sikas down in Kerry, a pure population of sikas in Kerry. At least there were. Is this still a valid view of things? And if so, shouldn't the sika be treated with the same reverence as the red?
It's a great question. It kind of comes back to the cultural aspects I mentioned. So, all three of these species have these really interesting histories. And these natural histories, which we've been a part of, you know, I think we probably have to take them into account alongside the ecological arguments. So you mentioned the hybridization. We have pure red deer in County Kerry, which are from this Irish stock reintroduced many thousands of years ago. We have red deer from other European stock, including Britain. And then we have sika, pure sika, also in the southeast, based on the last genetic analysis, actually some pure sika in Wicklow as well. But in Wicklow, we have a lot of hybridization. So this, again, comes back to the good deer management. If we're monitoring and keeping track of these things, we can track things like the wave of hybrids, where it starts, where it begins, where should we push management to be a bit more, maybe harsher on them, where can we let the foot off the pedal? For me, it's maybe a bit of a biogeographic argument. We have red deer all across Europe, and they're probably one of the most important cultural species, especially in terms of mammals. And, you know, if we want to associate Ireland in the biogeographic context, red deer certainly fit in. Fallow deer maybe overlap a little bit there. But when it comes to sika, you know, sika are generally found in Far East Asia, so they're quite a bit removed compared to the other two species. Again, it really comes down to what we decide to do as an island, as a community. Do we want to, you know, knock down the sika and bring reds back in areas where they were driven out? Or do we want to say, okay, this is our neobiota, this is our new system and our new ecology, and we're going to manage that and live with that? I think both have their merits. I see sort of slippery slopes for both of them, because you could go so far, as you mentioned, to say, let's remove all of the deer, which I think nobody would agree to. But at the same time, if you say, okay, species from Far East Asia are fair game, it gives me a bit of nervousness. I would be afraid someone's going to rock up with a trailer full of wild boar and say, well, we have them in Britain, we have them in mainland Europe, let's have them here as well, regardless of the paleo history of the species. So arguments for both probably will end up somewhere in the middle, and I think that's probably where the compromise will be, ecologically, you know, culturally, and, you know, what is actually feasible. I think eliminating any species, although humans have been historically quite good at it, is pretty difficult these days.
Politically, we can't bring back the wolf because people won't accept it due to the paranoia surrounding it. But we could bring in the lynx, and there is some evidence that there were lynx in Ireland. If we were to reintroduce lynx, would it help significantly to control deer numbers?
It's always a very difficult question to answer, because no matter what you try to predict animals will do, they tend to do their own thing at the end of the day. I've studied and published on wolves and lynx, and I actually think on balance, wolves are a better idea. We have wolves in Central Europe and Western Europe, in places where human populations are actually quite high. And when they have the prey base and you know, a bit of space, they can get away with that because they're such good generalists. They're really, really adaptable. Lynx, on the other hand, they tend to be really secretive and they tend to be really sensitive to human disturbances. And if you look at the key areas for lynx in Europe, they're nearly all, you know, mountainous regions, you know, far away from human disturbances, really low human population densities, and they tend to be really highly forested. And the problem with Ireland is that we really don't have a good, you know, good forest cover, which provides lynx with good hunting opportunities. Wolves, on the other hand, they don't need to sort of sit in the dark and ambush their prey like a lynx. They can just run after it. And especially if you get a pack of wolves, you know, they can run prey down for many kilometers. So, you know, in many ways, they actually work well with more open landscapes. And certainly the Sika, which have been introduced to Ireland, are completely naive to the idea of wolves, because the Sika were introduced after the wolf became extinct. So somewhere deep down in the red genetics, somewhere deep down in the fallow genetics, there is the experience of being chased by wolves. But the Sika in Ireland, unless they had that experience also in Japan, they're going to be very naive to this, to a newly introduced predator. So, I mean, it would be a fantastic experiment. I think I'm all for it, but, you know, I'm not the one who needs convincing. I think there's a really big foundation of science that needs to be done first. You know, stuff that we aren't doing, but they're doing in the UK for stuff like lynx. That has to be done first. That's how you get stakeholders on board, and that's how you start answering the questions that need to be answered by people who, you know, might be adversely affected by something like the reintroduction of large carnivores.
As you've said, Adam, you've written extensively on wolves and lynx. And some time ago, myself and Richard were in the national park there in Bavaria, and we got to see wolves at close quarters. I'm just wondering how the people in Bavaria feel about having the wolves close to them, because there are some stories. But anyway, you can tell us more.
Yeah, my university is the University of Freiburg, which is actually in the southwest of Germany, but I live in southeast Germany in Bavaria, because my professor and my office is based out of Bavarian Forest National Park. So that is probably the place you were in Bavaria. Mm-hmm. If, yeah, great. Okay. Well, I know it well. I've been here for 4.5 years now. Of course, we have a pretty good established population of wolves. And actually, I was involved in a study where we assessed the visitors to the national park, both Bavarian Forest National Park and on the Czech side of the border. There's a national park called Šumava. And we interviewed visitors to both, and we asked them about their attitudes to returning wolves. And for the most part, they were extremely positive. You know, people understand that they're part of the system. They really do think that they belong in national parks and forest areas. And in general, they're not afraid of wolves. And we saw some differences, between nationalities. Czechs were generally more they accepted wolves a little bit more than Germans. But when it came to something like fear, we saw differences when it came to education or gender.
How do you think the Irish would react, especially in County Wicklow?
Whew. That's a great question. I think Ireland is a special case, and probably Britain will be a special case if they decide to move in that direction as well, because we put moral agency, you know, we actually have to move the animals ourselves to put them into these landscapes. And it, for the rest of mainland Europe, it's been a natural expansion of wolves. It has been assisted when it comes to lynx, but the wolf expansion, there's never been an introduction of wolves anywhere in Europe. It's just been natural dispersion and natural movement, you know, facilitated by the legal frameworks from the European Union, facilitated by shifts in land use, shifts in human population densities towards cities and away from countryside areas. So when it comes to the rest of Europe, with wolves, it's been quite natural. But with Ireland, it would have to be, you know, human assisted. And that puts a really different slant on things. You know, if wildlife comes back by itself, it's generally celebrated. And if it's put back, it's generally, you know, fought tooth and nail.
Niall, would you welcome them? You live in County Wicklow.
I would say a qualified welcome, because I think that the time isn't right. I would love for there to be a time when wolves can be restored to their rightful place in the Irish countryside. However, the Ireland that we have today is markedly different from the one that the wolves used to inhabit. In Wicklow, of course, you're talking large numbers of sheep. It's a very important sheep farming area. There would obviously be resistance there. There would also be issues around prey availability. We're talking, there are large numbers of deer, particularly Sika, but to what extent would the wolves go for other prey? Would there be enough prey to sustain their population? Are the deer enough for them? So there's those kind of issues around that. But I think we also need to look at the concept more of rewilding, which is not just putting wolves back in. We have to make sure that the habitat properly exists for them and for the other creatures that depend on the same ecosystem. Everything is connected. Wicklow and Ireland in general has a remarkable absence of native trees. Wicklow has slightly more than most other counties do, but even so, it's still very small in the grand scheme of things. And when you go across Europe, places like Bavaria or France or countries like that, you still have vast swathes of forest and woodland where these animals can move, can be undisturbed by people mainly. In Ireland, we don't have that. We have a very artificial landscape in Ireland. So I think that it needs to be, the restoration of wolves would need to be done as more of a wider rewilding, restoring of large, vast areas of habitat. And ultimately, if that can happen, then the benefits for all sorts of wildlife, not just wolves, would be absolutely phenomenal.
Richard, what would you think?
Well, I would be surprised if wolves couldn't make a go of it no matter what the landscape. They are extremely versatile in what they do. They're very capable animals. I can't see it happening politically, unfortunately, but I would love if there were wolves around the place. And the situation you meet in Eastern Europe and you wander the mountains there, people accept the wolf is present and you hear him howling sometimes at night. In Italy, the same. In Switzerland now, they've got back into Switzerland. And I remember, but you remember the Bayerischer Wald National Park that you mentioned there. Do you remember the story we heard there, mm-hmm. Derek, of the 10 wolves that were released into the park?
Yes.
To restore them. And the children queuing at the bus stops in the morning began feeding their lunches to the wolves. And one of them got bitten on the bottom by a wolf. So the poor old wolves were all exterminated. They got posses together, went out and shot all 10 wolves and brought the bodies back to the headquarters. And when they counted them, they found they had 12 wolves. So they had killed 2 wolves that were there already. Now, you probably know all about this, Adam. This might be a kind of a legend or something that has grown up around the ladies. Adam, you probably know the facts about this. What are they?
I try to keep away from legends and stick to the science. In Bayerischer Wald or Bavarian Forest, I believe the first wolf came back here around 2012. It was either 2012 or 2015, and followed closely by a second one. And actually, the first breeding event in this area was one wolf that came from Italy, one wolf that came from Poland, and they met in the middle in Bavarian Forest. So it's some kind of European love story. Of course, being in the European Union, they didn't need any visas or anything to get around. But it just shows you how As you said, they're so adaptable. They give every habitat that they're in such a good go. You know, for a wolf to walk from Poland to here, that's quite a feat. And for one to come from Italy to here, cross the Danube and everything to get to this national park and the Alps, you know, that's just really shows the adaptability of them as a species. I think they're not to be underestimated. They can switch their behaviours in a very fine scale way to adapt to what's in front of them. So as Niall said, it's quite a different country than it was 250 years ago or so. Actually, we've even less people, but what we do with the landscape is quite a bit different. But it's really difficult to give them a fair chance when you know that the habitat isn't there, when you know if you want restored native forests in 50 years, 100 years, it actually comes back down to stuff like deer and what we do now and what we decide now in terms of deer management, how much damage from deer to forests are we willing to accept? How much fencing do we need to put up? That's actually planning hundreds of years into the future. Where are the forests going to be? And it's, you know, it's something that can't be taken lightly. It's something that needs good strategy. It needs national involvement. It needs buy-in from stakeholders now. It needs understanding of the science of wildlife management, understanding of the ecology. And, you know, it's not easy to do. I think that's probably why it's been so under-addressed in Ireland at the moment. But, you know, the good thing is other places do it. Other countries in Europe do it. In North America, they're very good at wildlife management as well. And, you know, we can make a conservation success story out of that if we want to.
Once we have the facts, and that's why the research you guys are doing with those camera traps is so vitally important.
Absolutely.
Lovely to talk to you, Adam. Thank you very much indeed, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks, guys. Thank you for the great conversation.
Thank you, Adam, more importantly. Now,